Welcome to Valley Church. If I haven't met you yet, my name is Maddie, and we're so glad you're here. And I introduce myself as Maddie because I've gone by Maddie for a lot of years. Most of my friends call me Maddie, but my real name is Madison, and I love the name Madison. I think it's absolutely beautiful, and because my father is in the room tonight, I think it's worth shouting out that if you ask him, he'll say, I named my daughter Madison. I didn't name her Maddie. And so he's one of the few people that still calls me Madison. Is there anyone else in the room who goes by a nickname, maybe other than their original name? Okay, a couple people. You few are going to resonate with this story. So, and those of you who didn't, you're going to learn something. So growing up in grade school, all the way through high school, for the most part, I went by Madison with teachers, but my friends called me Maddie. And then when I was in college, I remember my RA was making little name tags for the doors in our dorm room, and she was like, hey, do you want me to write Madison or Maddie? And this was a surprisingly difficult choice for me because I had always defaulted to Madison. I introduced myself as Madison. I wrote Madison on school assignments. But Maddie was just what ended up catching, is what people would call me. So, for those of you who do not go by a nickname, I don't think you understand the turmoil that this can cause. Because there's the lucky few of you who maybe you're an Aaron or a Cody or a Paige, and that's just your name. You don't have to decide if you're going to go by Cody or Codison. And I had to decide if I was going to go by Maddie or Madison. It's a stressful moment. So in college, I made the switch. I started introducing myself as Maddie to professors or new people. Even when I started my first job out of college, I went by Maddie. All my work emails, correspondence, my email signature, everything was under Maddie. It was never Madison. So then, a strange situation presented itself when I was changing jobs in 2021. I was updating my resume and I thought, it's probably more professional. Is it more professional for my resume to say Madison? I don't know. And so then it led me to being interviewed as Madison. And then I got hired at a new job as Madison. My boss caught wind once my name popped up on Zoom and it said Maddie. And he was like, hold on, do you go by Maddie? Because I've been working really hard to remember your name as Madison. And I need to know right now if you go by Maddie, because once I know it, I know it. And I was like, oh, no, that's fine. Madison's great. I love Madison. You know, I hadn't gone by Madison in a while. Do you know how weird it is to go by Maddie for over a decade and then just switch to Madison? Not only that, but everyone else in my life called me Maddie. But for the 2 years that I worked at this company, everyone at work called me Madison. And so even here at church, you might be like, I never thought of you as a Madison. You were always a Maddie to me. But while at this job, I remember thinking, this feels kind of strange because although I love the name Madison, I really enjoy that they call me Madison. I have no problems with it. It just seems like this alter ego. Like if they really knew me, they would call me Maddie. If they heard that people outside of work called me Maddie, they would be like, what? I always knew you as Madison. But if I was talking to my friends about my job, and they'd be like, oh, I forget they call you Madison. That's so weird. I've never called you Madison. So although this is just a silly example about a name, at a deeper level, I would guess that you have felt this too, that you think you're known by someone, and then there's just some disconnect. Maybe they just don't quite know you. Or you wonder if anyone knows the real you, if they know the deep parts of you, if they know you like you know yourself. So tonight we're going to read through and meditate on Psalm 139 to learn just how well God himself knows us. So before we dive in, the book of Psalms is a book of poems, and we read really honest prayers from the authors. Many of the Psalms are written by David. We read about really honest prayers to God. Eugene Peterson, in his book Answering God, the Psalms as Tools for Prayer, he describes these poets as those who use words to drag us into the depth of reality itself. So he says that when we read Psalms, We will expect to find the experience of being human before God exposed and sharpened. I really like how he phrases that, to find the experience of being human before God exposed and sharpened. Because it means that when we open up the Psalms, we read real human experiences on display. Being a Christian can feel really cookie cutter. You come to church, maybe you pray, you say things like, oh yeah, things are good, busy, but good. But then you open up the Psalms, and you see honesty, prayers of anguish and celebration, frustration and fear spoken directly to God. Again, Peterson in his book says that God speaks to us, but it's our prayers are what are the answers. So when God speaks to us, our answers are our prayers. The answers are not always articulate. Silence, sighs, or groaning. The answers are always also not positive. Anger, skepticism, curses, these are all also responses. But always, God is involved, whether in darkness or light, whether in faith or despair. This is hard to get used to. Our habit is to talk about God, not to him. We love discussing God, but the Psalms resist these discussions. So we're going to let Psalm 139 take us there tonight. We're not just going to scratch the surface, not only talk about God. We're here tonight to talk to him. We'll read how David talked to him and then how we can respond as well. So turn in your Bibles to Psalm 139. And tonight I'm going to be reading from the New Living Translation. O Lord, you have examined my heart and know everything about me. You know when I sit down or stand up. You know my thoughts even when I'm far away. You see me when I travel and when I rest at home. You know everything I do. You know what I'm going to say even before I say it, Lord. You go before me and follow me. You place your hand of blessing on my head. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too great for me to understand. David describes being deeply known by God. God has looked into his heart and knows everything. David feels seen by a God who knows his movements, where he goes, when he sits, or when he stands. He knows our outward actions and our inward thoughts. He knows our thoughts when we're near to him or when we are very far away from him. He knows when we're traveling, going in and out, doing things about our day. And he knows us when we're simply sitting in the quiet rest of our home. He knows the very words that are about to come out of our mouths before we've even spoken them. The thoughts, as they're forming into words, he knows them. He's one step ahead of us, aware of the next move that we're going to make, and he's behind us, following us as we make our decisions and our mistakes. David is overwhelmed by these thoughts. You know so much about me. It's too wonderful to even think about. I can't even understand or fathom it. It's beyond comprehension that you know me this way. David makes it clear that God knows me. It's a good feeling when someone knows every little bit about you. When someone says, I got this for you because it reminded me of you. And it's just the perfect thing, the perfect snack, the perfect specific treat that you really like, the thoughtful gift that you didn't even know that you needed until they gave it to you. Think about a person in your life who knows you the best. They know when you make that one face, and when you make it, that means you're upset. Or when you have that little nervous tick because you're feeling kind of anxious. Or when you sit in a way that you know they're feeling really relaxed. Or you laugh in that way when you feel the most carefree and full of joy. God knows you even more. He's also the one who knows parts of you that only you know. You can be a totally open book with someone. They know everything about you. There's no secrets. You've told them everything you can think about yourself. But only you know your thoughts. Only you know the way that your brain processes a situation, the insecurities that spike up or the temptations that you face, the fears that you harbor. He knows. Being known in this way can feel really vulnerable. You're exposed in a way that doesn't allow any part of you to remain unknown. There isn't a thought I can have, an action I can do, a moment I can escape from that God doesn't see. That makes me squirm a little bit, because I know the part of me that's weak, that wishes I could be more put together, more on top of things, kinder in my words, holier in my actions, more committed to do the things that are good for me. But I often don't do the right thing. I often choose the easier path, the way which gives me temporary satisfaction, the way of the world. God sees that too. He knows those thoughts too. Those aren't just the thoughts that I have within myself. So this vulnerability actually continues, picking up again in verse 7. I can never escape from your spirit. I can never get away from your presence. If I go up to heaven, you are there. If I go down to the grave, you are there. If I ride the wings of the morning, if I dwell by the farthest oceans, even there your hand will guide me and your strength will support me. I could ask the darkness to hide me and the light around me to become night. But even in darkness, I cannot hide from you. To you, the dark night shines as bright as day. Darkness and light are the same to you. Not only are my thoughts and my actions known, but even if I wanted to, I can't hide from the Lord. I can never escape your presence. If I go to be with you, you're there. If I die and I'm in the grave, you're there. If I could fly so far east or so far west, any place in the sky, you're there. If I could go to the deepest part of the ocean where no one dwells, even there, your hand will guide me. Even if I try and hide in darkness, I go to a place where the light around me became dark. Even there, it's not too dark for you. I can't hide from you. Even there in the darkest of dark, it shines bright because you are there. You turn the darkness to shine as bright as the day. I cannot hide from your presence. I look back on the moments in my life where I thought I was alone, I thought I could hide, and he was there. What we learn from these words of David is that God was there with me. When I reflect on this, knowing that God was there with me in every moment, I have two different responses. One is comfort and relief. Wow, Lord, even if I tried to hide from you, you found me. In fact, I've tried to hide from you. I've tried to pretend like you're not there. I've tried to go about things my own way, going to the very place that I think you'll never be. But you were there. Thank you, Lord, that even when I wasn't strong enough to face you, when I wasn't strong enough to obey, when I wasn't disciplined enough to keep you at the front of my mind, even there, you were with me even there. You never forget about me. There wasn't a moment that you let me out of your grasp and let me run free by myself. You were with me even there. There wasn't a darkness I lived in that you weren't there. The darkest of dark, the most painful moment I've ever experienced, the heaviest burden I've ever carried, the most tragic story that no one should have to experience, the most shameful sin and disobedience, even there, you were with me even there. Your light shined so bright in that darkness that even the darkest of dark was made light by you. Thank you, Lord. However, I haven't always been comforted by these words. The second response I've had to knowing that God was always there is anger. What do you mean you were there? You knew about this? You knew I was going to go through this? You knew the misstep I was going to take and you still let me take it? You knew the tragedy I was about to experience and I still had to experience it? Why is this the hand I was dealt? Because I trusted you with the thing that was most painful in my life. I trusted you with a burden that pains me, the thorn in my flesh or the heartache that keeps me awake at night. And you were there? Yes, even there. Even when I'm angry at you, even when I wish I could hide from you, even when I'm in the darkest of dark, you make it light. And I think this is exactly what David was getting at. I can't hide from you even if I wanted to. And if David's words weren't enough, all we need to do is look at Jesus. Emmanuel, God with us. He knew his friend was going to die, and instead of going there soon enough to save him in time, he let Lazarus die. He let Lazarus die, and then he wept with his friends. He experienced sorrow. He walked through sadness so that he could sympathize with our weakness. He knew he was going to raise Lazarus from the dead, but he knew we would walk through darkness, and so he did too. He chose to walk through darkness. He's present even when your loved one dies? Yes, even there. Next in our psalm, David turns from describing how God knows me and how he was there for me in every moment to how it is that he knows me so well. In verse 13, you made all the delicate inner parts of my body and knit me together in my mother's womb. Thank you for making me so wonderfully complex. Your workmanship is marvelous. How well I know it. You watched me as I was being formed in utter seclusion, as I was woven together in the dark of the womb. You saw me before I was born. Every day of my life was recorded in your book. Every moment was laid out before a single day had passed. How precious are your thoughts about me, O God. They cannot be numbered. I can't even count them. They outnumber the grains of sand. When I wake up, you are still with me. The reason why God knows you so well is because he was the one who created you that way. God knows me intimately because he created me. He created you with care and precision. He created you to love gardening. He wired your brain to enjoy solving complex problems. Or he created your hands to be skilled in building things. He created your heart kind and gracious to comfort others. He knit together your body. He put together chromosomes and genes, knitting together your DNA, created your tendons and muscles and bones, and wove them together. He decided on the amount of freckles on your body, how uniquely the different hairs would grow on your arms, how quickly your fingernails would grow. He designed the beautiful shade of your skin and the texture of your hair. He created your brain to be unique. No one else has a brain like yours. No one else thinks just like you. No one else can come up with the exact thoughts that you can. No one can construct the perfect joke like you can, or ponder the beauty of life like you can. He made you wonderfully complex. David said, you saw me before I was even born. It's not even that he knew us intimately now that we've grown up and have lived in this body for some time. No, before I was even born, God designed and fashioned my body and my personality and my life. Every moment was laid out before a single day had passed. David's response to this is praise. How precious are your thoughts about me, O God? They cannot be numbered. God didn't so carefully create you only for the sake of creating you. He did it because he loves you. He loves you so much, he wanted to create you uniquely. Don't forget, this is after David has already acknowledged that you know my innermost thoughts, and I cannot hide from you. God knows my anger, or my failures, shortcomings, missteps, outbursts, and imperfections, and yet, how precious are your thoughts about me, O God? He has so many precious thoughts about me that I can't even count them. They're more than the number of grains of sand. Even when I wake up the next morning, after everything I've experienced yesterday, good or bad, you are still with me. Next up in verses 19 to 22, we hear David talking about his enemies. This could be the setting that David was experiencing, which caused him to write this psalm, but let's read it. Verse 19. Oh God, if only you could destroy the wicked. Get out of my life, you murderers. They blaspheme you. Your enemies misuse your name. Oh Lord, shouldn't I hate those who hate you? Shouldn't I despise those who oppose you? Yes, I hate them with total hatred, for your enemies are my enemies. Okay, kind of intense. David has a visceral response to those who are against God. Verses 19 to 20 describe David identifying with God, recognizing how his enemies treat God. Verses 21 to 22 describe David siding with God. His anger is on behalf of God. He's saying, God, there are people who hate you and who are against you. Well, your enemy is my enemy. In fact, I hate them with total hatred. Destroy them. This is the part of the psalm where things start to feel a little weird. Why is David talking about hating people? Asking God to destroy the wicked? So this is not all that uncommon in the Psalms. You kind of read it, you might be really resonating with a psalm, and then the psalmist throws in a little something about their enemies and how their enemies are trying to get them. And it feels a little bit like whiplash. Almost like, why did the psalmist have to go and ruin this perfectly good psalm with talk about enemies? Eugene Peterson, again, describes these parts of a psalm are like a can of black spray paint defacing a memorial in white marble. So it's almost like this beautiful memorial of white marble, and you're like, yes. And then you get to talk about enemies, and it's like black spray paint. You're like, whoa, this was weird. And so we kind of find ourselves wanting to cut it out or not read that part, or if you're reading it out loud, just like end before you get to that part. And so he says when we want to edit out psalms like this, it's well-intentioned but wrong-headed. So why is it wrong-headed? He says, because our hate needs to be prayed, not suppressed. Hate is our emotional link with the spirituality of evil. It's the volcanic eruption of outrage when the holiness of being, either ours or another's, has been violated. It is also the ugliest and most dangerous of our emotions, the hair trigger on a loaded gun. Embarrassed by the ugliness and fearful of the murderous, we commonly neither admit or pray our hate. We deny it and suppress it. But if it is not admitted, it can quickly and easily metamorphose into the evil that provokes it. And if it is not prayed, we have lost an essential insight and energy in doing battle with evil. These parts of the Psalms are some of the most honest, raw, and real emotions that are written. So I can't relate to David, who had people trying to chase him or kill him. But I have experienced enemies and conflict and come across those who hate God. Have you ever been this honest with God in your prayers? Truly, when was the last time you felt intense anger or hatred towards someone and you prayed those feelings to God? Certainly, we get permission from the book of Psalms and this psalm that God allows your honesty. I would even say he welcomes it. He wants you to come to him with everything in your heart. Your feelings aren't too wild or too angry or too much. He has space for them. Be honest. Bring those emotions to God. Don't fester on them or roll your eyes at God when you feel these feelings, trying to make a sense of them on your own. I cannot emphasize how valuable it has been in my own life to pray with anger to God. God, I don't feel like it. I'm frustrated. This feels like it's not working. Why am I still doing this? Is it worth it to follow you? Today, it doesn't feel worth it. I know you say you are good, but I don't believe you right now. You know what happened when I prayed those prayers to God instead of holding on to them myself? I found freedom. Not freedom in the sense that those feelings were magically gone. They weren't. But freedom knowing that God cares about me even there. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I go from your presence? God, even in my anger, you are here. Even when I don't know how to put my frustrations or disappointments or heartaches into words, you know my thoughts already. I can pray with honesty because you are with me even there. One more quote from Eugene Peterson, because this one was just too good. The last word on the enemies is with Jesus, who captured the Psalms. Love your enemies and pray for them that persecute you. But loving enemies presupposes that we know who they are, whether many or few, and have begun to identify them. So he's saying that our prayers of anger help us identify who these enemies are. Enemies are a fact of life, and we don't know if we have them or know who they are. And if we think that way, then we might just be a little naive and might not be processing how they're actually affecting us. But once they've been identified, we cannot stay in our anger and hatred for our enemies. He finishes with, "While hate provides the necessary spark for ignition, it is the wrong fuel for the engines of judgment. Only love is adequate to sustain these passions." We bring our raw and honest emotions to God and then let the Spirit transform us. He doesn't ask us to come to him with our emotions already wrapped tightly in a bow. But when we come to him with our emotions, over time, his Spirit renews our thinking. And out instead comes love and patience and peace, the fruit of the Spirit. Now, our final two verses, verse 23. David says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. Point out anything in me that offends you, and lead me along the path of everlasting life." The psalm ends how it began. David began with, "You have searched me and you know me. You know everything about me." And then he goes on to describe how well God knows him. And then it ends with, "Search me and know me." The first time it felt like an admission, "You already searched me and you already know me." But the repetition of this line at the end almost feels like a request to continue. "Search me, Father, again. You already know me, but search me again. This time, make me aware of my shortcomings. I'm willing to go through the test. I know how well you know me. I cannot hide from you. So point out anything in me that is not of you. Reveal the parts of my heart that offend you, for I know that this is the way. In your way, in your light, you lead me to the path of everlasting life." So, this psalm requires a lot of meditation. It can be read over and over and over again, and I know God will reveal himself to you each time. There is great wisdom found in meditating on God's word. We can be like a tree firmly planted alongside a river, rooted in streams of living water. So we're going to let the psalm sink into our hearts tonight. Where did you find the little challenge in your heart when we read through it? Which part made you go, ooh, ouch. Yeah, that one hurt a little. That's me. Is it being seen by God, known by him? Even when it feels like no one else knows you. When you have people in your life calling you Madison at work, but you don't want someone who only knows part of you. You long for someone who knows all parts of you. Is it the realization that we can't run from God? That in the happiest moments of our life and in the most devastating parts of our life, he was there. What part of your life do you need to think back on and realize that God was there? When you lived it, it didn't feel like he was there, but now you know he was there all along. What part of your life are you struggling through right now, and how can you see the Lord's presence even there? Do you need to remember honesty in your prayers? Bring all of your emotions to God. Has it been a while since you've been 100% honest with God? Or maybe this is the first time in a while, or the first time ever, that you ask God, search me, know me, reveal the parts in me that are not of you, and lead me to green pastures of life. So we're going to spend time in prayer right now and pray these things to God. I'm going to read a prayer, and then I'm going to leave us with time to reflect. So you can close your eyes. This is a prayer from Every Moment Holy Prayer Journal. Inspire me to tell in words of the holiness of your presence, made manifest in all tasks, at all hours of all days. For you, O Lord, are with us always. Every sphere of life and creation is yours, and all are threads of the same bright weave. Our going out, our coming in, our fellowship and our loneliness, our youth and our old age, our passions and our vocations, our chores and our entertainments. You are equally present in our failures and in our successes, in our sleep and in our wakeful hours, in our tears and in our laughter, in our births, in our lives, and even in the hours of our death. You are ever present with us. You are here. You are with me in every moment. Every moment is holy. So take some time to pray now. I'm going to leave several minutes of quiet for you to meditate on his word. Search me and know me. Point out anything in me that does not lead to you. So we're going to sit here. If it starts to feel uncomfortable, lean into it. Maybe God has something he wants to tell you. Ask him to reveal himself to you tonight.